Hey kids, you're listening to a couple of annoyed grunt boys, and this is the 103rd Simpsons podcast.
Who's a favorite TV clown who likes to clown around? K-R-U-S-T-Y. Hey! Quit stepping on my solo, you creepy little show monkeys!
That's right, it's the Simpsons podcast that discusses the beloved animated sitcom, The Simpsons. That's right, but we don't discuss The Golden Age, which is seasons 1 through 10. No, we watch from 11 and beyond. Why 11 and beyond, you ask? Well, we feel that those other seasons, the 1 through 10, they've been talked about enough in the podcast universe. We feel that the later years never get looked at, but we're here to look at them at random. We watch an episode and discuss, but I don't discuss by myself. No, that would be silly. I have a co-host. I'm a half annoyed grunt boy, Craig, and my other half annoyed grunt boy is
Steve. How's it going, Craig?
It's going great. You know, a lot of times in these intros, we discuss our personal life,
mm-hmm.
you know, things going on. Not much is going on. You know, we'll talk about our TVs or games that we were playing. But I have something really weird that to discuss on this Simpsons podcast.
Do tell.
Steve actually sent me this article from the AV Club, and it's the title is called "The Simpsons Lifestyle is Unattainable, Confirming the American Dream is Dead," written by Aaron Paul. That's right. Let's talk about The Simpsons before we talk about The Simpsons.
A novel idea. So this is actually an article that references an episode of NPR's Planet Money, which references an article by Danny Alexis Reiskamp, who wrote an essay in The Atlantic magazine, basically saying that The Simpsons lifestyle is no longer attainable. They did some really deep work to find that based on a shot of Homer's paycheck in 1996, Homer would have made about $25,000 that year. And so back in 96, the average income was about $35,000. And so if they kept it up and everything doubled, Homer today would be making about $50,000, which is not nearly enough to support five people in a household, even working at a union job at a power plant.
I mean, that's good for just him and Marge.
Yeah.
You know, growing up as a kid, what did you think of the Simpsons, like, status in life? Because they portray them on the show as to being, like, lower middle class.
Yeah, and especially in the first, like, five or six seasons.
Because even as a kid, like, I saw their TV, I'm like, oh, at least our TV's better than their TV.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, the Simpsons don't even have a computer.
Which is a joke that they made in, like, 1997.
But now when you watch the show, you see the Simpsons family, like, wow, they are well off.
Yeah, like, they have more cars than Principal Skinner. But no, they always have the newest technology. They're able to travel a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
Being a single income household with three children, one of whom gets in trouble a lot, and one of whom who, like, probably needs a lot of expensive things, you know, music lessons don't come free, yoga lessons, all the stuff that Lisa does.
Each kid has their own bedroom.
That's also a very good point.
You know what's funny is, like, when, again, back to when you were a kid, the Simpsons household was, like, meant to also be, like, look like a crappy house to live in.
Yeah.
But now, again, when you're an adult and, like, you know, can barely afford anything, you see that house, like, God, that is a great house. Like, I would so live there.
Yeah, we're all like Frank Grimes now.
Yeah, we really, like, are.
This jerk off just lazes about and he gets this beautiful house while I'm stuck in an apartment with a bowling alley underneath me and another one above me.
I mean, how would you do a modern take of the family if this was now?
I think that they'd probably, like, have maybe live in a duplex or something.
It'd be like a duplex. The next door would be Patty and Selma.
Yeah.
And maybe their mom, Marge's mom. And then Homer and Marge live in the next duplex, but it's only a two-bedroom, Steve.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Two-bedroom, one bath. So Homer and Marge, and then the kids are all there, but Maggie, you know, is in their bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Homer and Marge's. They don't have a rumpus room. It's not a two-story. They have a car.
Right. Marge probably has to work.
Marge has a job, definitely. What would she be doing?
Well, she did work at, like, that gym that one time.
Cop?
Eh.
Painter?
Yeah. Weed salesman?
Bowling instructor. But yeah, I think that's what it would kind of have to be.
Yeah.
Thank God that The Simpsons is fantasy and we can live in that fantasy world. Steve, let's go to that world right now.
Yeah, let's go to that fantastic time of 2008.
Hey, specifically, not bad.
No, it's fine. May 18th, 2008.
Although the housing market was terrible then. Jesus.
We've been bad for a long time.
That's true.
Craig, what was the number one movie in the box office?
Why? It's that, I think it was like the sequel to that hit C.S. Lewis franchise that's been going strong ever since.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian.
Chronicles of what?
Narnia.
Oh, okay.
What do you think I said?
No, you remember that viral video?
No.
Oh, with Andy Samberg and Chris Parnell?
Oh.
I'm eating muffins or something.
I don't know, Steve. I've seen too many things to remember.
I understand.
But yeah, weren't they like... Whoever studio was like, all right, this is the next Lord of the Rings saga. And like, we're going to have like 8 movies because there's like 8 of these books. And then it just fizzled out and died. And no one watched it.
It's interesting, too, because, you know, C.S. Lewis and J.R. Tolkien, they were buds.
They were, yeah.
And so, like, I wonder if they're like roasting in hell and like they're just like, you know, J.R.R. is like, my movies are better than yours.
And C.S. Lewis is like, you're in hell. I'm in heaven because I wrote about Jesus, you idiot.
Exactly.
You're in Mordor. Tolkien.
You're in my own personal hell where they just play the Lord of the Ring movies on a loop.
Yeah. Hey, what were we jamming to in 2008?
Well, the number one Billboard Hot 100 song was Bleeding Love by Leona Lewis. But I don't care what they say. I'm in love with you. They try to pull me away, but they don't know the truth. My heart's crippled by the pain that I keep on closing. You cut me open and I keep bleeding, keep bleeding love. I keep bleeding, I keep... It's a very descriptive song, Steve. It is.
Just like take a knife and cut me open and my love bleeds all over. I remember that song.
I kind of do.
The last time I heard it was 2008. Does like the Red Cross use this song for commercials? I don't know.
I think they do. Yeah. That or Bounty paper towels.
Yeah. Those bears and their dirty assholes.
So fucking gross. I hate it. And I love bears.
Everyone's
my enjoyment of bears.
All right, well, let's enjoy The Simpsons, Steve. What's this episode about?
It is called...
What's this episode about?
Yes, the episode called All About Lisa is this. So this episode's about... So as Krusty's new assistant, Lisa steals the spotlight and gets a TV show of her own. Meanwhile, Homer and Bart bond over their newfound love of coin collecting.
Cool.
Yeah, totally.
All right. Let's take a cool break, man.
Radical. We'll be right back. And we're back. Today we're talking about All About Lisa, the 20th episode of the 19th season. It originally aired on May 18th, 2008. It is episode 420 in the show's run. Your nerd code is KABF13. It was written by John Frink, directed by Stephen Dean Moore, and your showrunner is Al Jean.
Wow, this is episode 420, man.
Yeah.
You figure they could have gone for someone thought that was funny.
I know.
So John Frink here, we've done a couple episodes with him. One of the first ones that he wrote was Bye Bye Nerdy. That was one of our first like episodes as well. We did Simpsons Tall Tales. He did that one. Love is in the N2O2AR. I don't want to go that one as far as that one, but it's improvised. Did we do Bobby It's Cold Outside?
I don't think so.
I think I always bring that up every time I see that one for some reason. Politically End Up with Homer Simpson.
Mm-hmm. The famous Ted Nugent episode.
Yeah. We had a Sideshow Bob episode a couple of weeks ago. We kept talking about the one where they go to Italy and the kid, the Vendetta. Well, we should have done some research, but John Frink wrote that episode. It's called The Bob, not The Bob Next Door, which we did that one, but Italian Bob.
Uh-huh.
So we know who to blame when we get to the Italian Bob.
That's right. But will we feel the same about this episode?
I don't know. I haven't watched it.
Yeah, me neither.
Should we watch it?
I guess so. We can give it a try. I'll write notes very quickly.
Yeah, that's what we were supposed to do during the break when we just did our intro. So you realize that, right? Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. What did you do?
I was, working on email.
Oh, because you're so addicted to it, like Mel says later in this episode?
Yeah, I love checking email. Can't get enough of it. It's not stress-inducing at all.
Steve, when I turned on the TV, the old Disney Plus, I watched a couch gag that I think I just saw. Then I thought,
huh.
did I turn on the wrong episode? Because it starts out with a living room and the computer, a window shown, and a cursor drags and drops each member onto the couch. And I swear, I just watched this one. You know, then they put everyone back in the trash bin. Well, it's because it was last seen in Mo and Lisa, which we discussed in our, 107th episode? So just a few episodes back. I mean, we know that, you know, The Simpsons reuse the couch gag often, but I feel like on this podcast, we haven't had it just so frequently.
Or, yeah, this is the first time when I was like, oh, we just saw that. Like, it didn't even take me that long to figure out which episode
it was. That's why I had to look. I'm like, wait, did I turn on the wrong episode? Steve, I know you always have some trivia, but I have some trivia up front.
Oh, boy.
This episode had the second lowest ratings in Simpsons history.
Wow.
With just 6.11 million viewers. I mean, that trivia at the time was probably from 2008.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's gone down since, you know, with streaming and so many more things to watch.
Yeah. Let's see.
If an episode of TV now was 6.1 or 6.11 million viewers, it'd be like the number one show.
Yeah. Let's take a look here at like a season 32.
So last night's episode was new. Time stamping this. It was The Return of Albert Brooks, which was kind of cool.
Oh, fun.
And it's kind of funny because it was... we'll get into this episode, but last night's episode, I forgot what it's called, but Homer takes Cletus and turns him into a huge country star. So he manages his career.
Hmm.
Remember an episode? Well, at least on that episode, they make reference to Homer managing Laureline Lapkus.
Oh, well, at least they know where they're at.
I know I said her name wrong, but I do that on purpose.
It's fun.
Yeah. So. But it was fun to hear, you know, Albert Brooks again.
Oh, yeah. He's the best guest.
Steve, did we find the ratings for last answer, maybe the week before?
At it?
Might be too soon in the record.
Yeah, but let's go for Mother. Nope. Let's go for Wad Goals, episode 697, which aired the week previous.
Okay.
And it was watched by 1.24 million.
So there you go.
So a sixth of the viewers as at the time, the second lowest rated episode so far.
Yeah. And because of those numbers, we're getting a season, 33 and 34.
Exactly.
So. Also, this episode's title and plot, as well as certain elements and scenes to reference in the film, are all about Eve.
Oh, yes.
Because it's all about Eve and not Steve.
That's right. Those godless people trying to make it all about me.
All right. Well, we got the hard stuff out of the way. As the show begins, Steve.
Yes, our episode proper begins underneath the iconic Springfield sign, where a celebrity-filled event is taking place. The cameras flash as stars step out of their limos and onto the red carpet. Let's go to an announcer with a transatlantic accent for more.
Welcome to the 38th Annual Springfield Showbiz Awards. There are more stars here tonight than you can see in the sky, thanks to light pollution. Here comes the magnificently mammaried mistress of midnight movie mayhem, Booberella. The twins look happy tonight. And what have we here? It's ventriloquist Arthur Crandall and his walnut wingman, Gabbo.
Gabbo,
hey,
Gabbo, over here.
Get a job, parasites.
When's the last time we saw Gabbo?
It's been a minute. I've got some thoughts on that clip. I did like the light pollution joke, but the Springfield Showbiz Awards. Can do better than that? I don't know. Like, even the Mr. Burns award for the achievement in the field of excellence actually has like a lot of words, but Showbiz Awards feels like a placeholder.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm being nitpicky. And having the girl or little person open up the limo for Gabbo, it's a interesting choice.
Because he's small?
Yeah, I guess so. It's just weird. Like, it's cool that he gets his own limo, I guess. But
upset you didn't get your own limo for tonight's record?
Yeah. I had to take an Uber. An Uber share, too. I had to drive around the block. Because we do at my house, and so it picked me up. I had to go around the block with three other people. I don't think Nancy and Tony are going to hit it off. They're in the car, too. They're on a first date.
During COVID?
Yeah, it seemed like a bad idea.
Oh, well.
Yeah, they're probably dead.
Cool.
Also, Gabbo telling the paparazzi to get a job is weird because they're literally doing their job.
Yeah, but is it really a respectable job, Steve?
No, but it's still a job.
That's true.
And also, the ventriloquist talking about respectable jobs. Come on.
All right, well, let's get back to this episode, Steve. So we're in that awards ceremony, and inside we get a tuxedo-clad distinguished British gent. He presents to the audience with the final award of the evening, the Entertainer of the Year. It's an award that's so prestigious, it recently won the Award of the Year Award at the 2007 Awardee Awards. Is that a better play for you, Steve?
Yes, the Awardee Awards. That's great.
But before the actor can offer the nominees, the voice of everyone's favorite Sideshow, not Bob, but Mel. Sideshow Mel takes over, saying that words and even the identity of the actor don't matter, nor does the fact that he's a parody of somebody. Who do you think the parody is, Steve?
I don't know. Maybe Ian McKellen?
All right, we'll go with that.
Okay.
Mel continues stating that the only person here that matters is the recipient of the award.
Well, I've got some fun trivia for you. Unlike most episodes, this one has narration by Sideshow Mel.
Well, I wouldn't have known that. See? Had not been for that trivia that you just wowed our ears.
I like to provide a service.
You get more Simpsons facts from this podcast than any other 138th Simpsons podcast.
That's right. And most true crime podcasts, too.
Huh. Well, you know, the recipient of that award, it's probably going to be Mel, right? Because he's doing the narration.
You would think so.
Well, it's not Steve.
Oh.
Yeah, he's just narrating this tale of fame, betrayal, and coin collecting. We'll get into that a little bit. You know, he's going through the panel. You see Krusty, but it's not him.
No. Nope.
We see Bumblebee Man, not him. And Plopper. Hey, he's back.
Hey.
But it's not Plopper, of course. The evening, as Mel puts it, is all about Lisa. Hey, he said the title of the episode.
He did.
This year's award goes to Lisa Simpson.
Surprised? Let me start at the beginning and tell you a little bit about Lisa. In fact, all about Lisa.
And now, in honor of Krusty's 4,000th episode, put your hands together for Drew Carey.
Thank you! Thank you! Wow, 4,000 episodes! Seems like just yesterday, Krusty stole his first joke from me. Seriously, though, I remember watching him as a kid, and I thought, I could do that, and I'm a kid. What I love about Krusty is he's always on. But to find out what, you gotta test his pee.
Pee!
Seriously, test his pee. He's a danger to the community. And now I give you a man whose act will never grow old because it started out that way. Krusty the Clown.
Thank you.
You know, kids just watching this episode for the first time and they see Drew Carey, they'd be like, that is the worst caricature of Drew Carey we've ever seen because he doesn't look like that anymore. Because, you know, they used to see Price is Right. Now he's like skinny with like big hair.
He might have had a beard for some time.
Yeah. He's, you know, cool looking. He looks like a hipster doofus like us.
Exactly.
Except for no.
We're the before.
We're the before. Yeah. That's fun to see some Drew Carey.
Yeah. His show, I feel, is grossly underrated. The Drew Carey Show, that is.
Yeah, they took a lot of risks towards the end because, you know, it starts out as your typical like sitcom, you know, like These Pals of Mine or Friends.
Exactly.
Or the Seinfeld Chronicles.
Or that one with Jennifer Grey that took place in L.A. with maybe Jeremy Piven. No, he was on Ellen's one. Never mind.
Yeah. But then like later, you know, I think when he started hosting the Whose Line Is It Anyway revival. And then he kind of had more like clout or not clout, but like creativity ideas for the Drew Carey Show. Like just do live episodes, do musical episodes, just do some wacky shit. That's like breaking the fourth wall. Who cares? It was fun.
Yeah. And also you had your first kind of dominant character in drag who wasn't doing it just for laughs.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. Back to the show. The famed clown entertainer begins his monologue by saying that he never thought he'd make it past 400 episodes due to the drinking and the smoking and the fact that he's just not that good. He then recalls the early days of the show with a clip of the original Krusketeers.
So is he talking about us that he never thought we'd make it past 400, which we haven't?
No, but and that just makes me think that we have to make 390.
And it's like due to the drinking.
Yeah.
It's due to our drinking and smoking and the fact that we're just not that good.
It's true.
So those Krusketeers, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Do kids know what Musketeers do? They still have, they don't have a Mickey Mouse Club anymore, right? Like on Disney Plus or anything.
Probably. I mean, probably not. I feel like they probably would have tried to make a comeback.
It seems like something would have done it at launch. Like, and for the kids, the Mickey Mouse Club.
It's all hip.
Yeah, so Krusty brings out those former child stars. And first up, we have Jesse. He was once a skateboarding teen who throws his arms out of its socket like he's playing the air guitar. Then next up, which I thought was really weird, there's a very pregnant CJ, which is fine. But then she gets down on her knees and seductively acts like a cat. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
Like, was that a thing her prepubescent like character did on the Krusty show. Like, that's even creepier if that was the case. Yeah.
I'm a little girl and I'm going to pretend I'm a kitty cat.
Like, seriously.
So you want to have sex with me?
I mean, it could be a reference to the Mickey Mouse Club. We don't know. I'm not going to do the research.
Mm-mm.
Like, did Annette do that?
I don't think so. I'm
referencing Annette, for those who don't know, who's a Mouseketeer back in the 60s.
Funicello.
Yeah. And the only reason we know that is because we watched the episode of Full House where they were on.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. But you thought it was weird too, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Really strange.
Okay. Then we get a tattooed cubby who declares Krusty owes him some money and that he served time in prison for the clown. And he's taken away by a police officer. Steve, what do you think he was using Cubby for? Drug mule?
Yeah, it's probably a drug mule.
All right. We'll agree on that one. Steve, stamp that for canon.
Agreed. Canon. Chunk. Yes, we see all the Krusketeers came back to see Krusty, except, of course, you know, for the successful ones. And now the Krusty Show is in search of a new Krusketeer. But who could it be?
It could be any of you! As long as you're willing to sign a 20-year personal services contract where I get 99% of all your earnings.
I am so going to try out for that.
Me too. But I hope you get it.
No, I hope you get it.
Well, I really hope you get it.
Yeah, I hope I get it too. Later.
For a second there, he hoped I got it.
Poor Milhouse.
Poor Milhouse.
Bart's just going to use you and stab you in the back like always. No one loves you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry. I was talking to you. Not
back to man.
Oh. I was talking to you, Steve, not Milhouse.
Bart's going to stab me in the back?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Bart Starr.
Famed football player who probably is dead. I don't know.
Mitzi Gaynor wants to stab you in the back, Steve. Let's just say that.
Okay.
So we head to stage one where... auditions for the new Krusketeers are underway. We have Sherry O'Terry. She's twirling batons. We got Milhouse walking on his hands and his legs are over his shoulders. He's like doing like a crab thing.
Mm-hmm.
He could probably pull the old Nick Weiger and suck his own hog, right?
Yeah.
Put a little asterisk there. Please reference Doughboys podcast, every other one for that reference.
Sure.
And then we get Ralph stuffing some those candy Twizzlers in his mouth. Insert another blowjob joke, Steve.
I was going to say, like, it would be overkill, but no, we should probably do another one.
All right. What do you got for me?
That'll make him popular in high school. I don't know.
Because kids love Twizzlers.
And blowjobs.
Oh, yeah.
These are the two things I know about children.
Jesus. I mean, teenagers. Wait, how do you know this about children? You're always going on.
Oh,
you
boy.
Hate children. Is this it? Hey, we got to put jokes in here somewhere. Someone's got to, right?
That's right. Krusty appears in a dapper pink sweatsuit saying that 90% of success is showing up on time. He then apologizes for being late. 4 hours late, specifically. Now it's time to pick a Krusketeer.
I always just assumed that the kids wouldn't notice, you know, because they're all auditioning for agents anyways. So
right.
It's kind of like, you know, American Idol and those shows. When everyone auditions at first, they audition in front of producers. And then they go and, you know, if like they're good enough, then they go to like the next round then to perform in front of the judges.
Yeah, you would just meet up with like some interns. That seems normal.
Yeah. Anyways, we have the first person up for a new Krusketeer is our good pal Nelson.
Ooh.
Yeah, he has tied four of the nerds, including Martin Prince, to a bench, and he blows on a pitch pipe and proceeds to punch the dweebs on the backs to the tune of Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
Yes, maybe. I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell because
yeah,
they didn't
have
much pitch, but that was my guess. But some trivia for you. His audition is a parody of Marvin Suggs and his Muppaphone from The Muppet Show, which is now streaming on Disney Plus.
Yeah, but I tried to watch that episode, but it's, I'm sorry, there's inappropriate behavior in this.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Canceling everything, just like Dr. Seuss.
Side note, if they would have just like the publisher, because all those books, the six ones that they're like not publishing anymore, like I never even heard of those ones, by the way. So if they just like stop publishing and not make an announcement, no one would care.
Yeah.
And also there actually is some pretty offensive imagery in those books.
Yeah, it's fine that the estate of Dr. Seuss wants to cancel these books voluntarily.
Yeah.
That no one cares. I mean, you can still read Hop on Pop.
Yeah. Those books didn't make me a Nazi like him.
Yeah.
Anyway, so after the Nelson one, we have Bart. He's barring from comedian extraordinaire Carrot Top's routine. by doing some prop comedy. So he pulls out some props from a trunk. He puts on a headlamp and just sorts his face to mimic a lantern fish. Kids are laughing. And then he straightens the lamp. He deep throats it and does his best jack-o'-lantern impersonation, which his eyes turn into triangles. Weird.
It's weird. So his act continues with him then swallowing the lamp. So the light goes down his throat and illuminates his chest. And then he says, E.T. He then puts on a large Afro wig and says, B.E.T. The crowd goes wild and Marge is proud that her son is a good for something.
So how are we on the E.T., B.E.T. joke, Steve?
I hate it. I feel like that's like... It might have been The Simpsons, but I feel like there's a show that was parodying bad comedy and they did the BET joke.
You like right? they're watching TV and it's like a really bad like SNL sketch or something.
Yeah, and it's like, E.T., what about BET?
I know what you're talking about. I feel like I saw something like that too. But, right.
Or am I conflating a bad comedian going, what about Mr. E.T.? I pity the fool who don't phone home.
Well, yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. And that's hilarious because that was from older Simpsons.
Exactly.
Sorry, I just saw a funny meme of that, you know, like, because white guys drive like this, but black guys, we drive like this, you know, like that yeah. meme or that scene. And then someone, you know, the Homer, like Lenny White, Carl Black, someone memed it with Lenny driving like the white dork and then Carl driving all cool. Oh, that was a good meme.
Yeah, I don't tend to like a lot of internet meme humor, but the Simpsons ones, like the meshing of two things, always gets me. It always makes me laugh.
Yeah, Simpsons. I got this from a Simpsons shit posting on Reddit. There's your meme a minute where you listen to people describe a meme.
Fascinating thing. As it is funny.
You know, and I bet when I watched this episode originally, I probably laughed at the BET joke.
Sure.
Now I've grown and learned that that's an offensive joke.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's also coming from a 10-year-old boy, so.
That's true.
And also Bart.
So Krusty says that all the kids were terrific, and he wishes he could make all of them Krusketeers, but the studio only has money for one, and he doesn't really want to. After considering all the talent, Krusty looks over to his dressing room, where a disheveled post-coital Miss Muntz is buttoning up her blouse when Krusty mishears her son's name.
What's your kid's name again?
Nelson Muntz.
Wilbur Mudd.
That's me. Here's mud in your eye. Oh!
I can't believe I lost.
That's not fair. Bart was great. Hey, Krusty, you're making a huge mistake not hiring my brother. Why didn't you hire them both? It won't cost you anything. You could call Bart an intern. In fact, the intern thing could open up a whole new world of free labor for you. Did you know the Discovery Channel doesn't have a single paid employee?
Okay, kid. You've convinced me.
To make Bart a Krusketeer?
Hell no. To make you my new intern. You're a real go-getter. Now go get me my dry cleaning, which is my code word for scotch. And give me my scotch, which is my code word for my bookie. Also, go get my dry cleaning.
What?
What are you standing around for? I wish I was paying you so I could dock your salary.
Oh.
Lisa didn't know it then, but she had just dipped her toe into the business of show. And it is a business, as you shall find out in about 3 seconds. 2, 1.
All right. Mel being a little metatextual there with the cut to commercials.
Yeah. So is it weird that we don't ever see any other Krusketeers? Oh.
Yeah. And it's weird that in the 60s or the 50s, they could afford 6 of them. And now they can't. They can barely afford one.
Yeah. So is it just one Krusketeer?
That's weirder.
Yeah.
To be like a Krusketeer. Like it's being like, this is our, it's like being in an army of one.
I don't know what to say.
Yeah. Let's just continue with the episode.
Sure.
So our second act continues at Krusty Lee Studios, where two crew members are carrying a sign for a show that says, Are You Fatter Than a Fat Guy? Which airs Wednesdays at 8. And Sideshow Mel's narration goes on to speak of show business being the home to scoundrels and saints, thespians and harlequins, and abbots and costelli. The one thing that they all had in common was an underpaid assistant.
Speaking of underpaid assistants, Lisa is following Krusty with a notepad in hand, ready to help the clown, and he instructs her to cancel his 1 o'clock appointment, move his 2 to 1, and cancel that. He also wants to replace the Sophia Loren jokes to Lindsay Lohan jokes.
Although now you'd probably change them to the Star of Bridgerton jokes. I don't know.
So on stage, Nelson is mimicking Flashdance when he's confronted by Krusty himself.
What are you looking at?
I'm just trying to hit my marks.
And I don't? Is that what you're saying?
No. I think you're a consummate pro.
Oh, so now you're judging me. Well, what do you think of this? You're fired.
Yeah? Well, my mom says you're a selfish lover.
I know what I want and I get it. I'll trash you in my memoirs. Pay attention, you'll be writing my memoirs.
Oh, I'll never last here.
Chin up, little gopher. You can succeed with Krusty. A few hints. Always carry a cigar in case he asks. Never meet his gaze. And if he mentions Bitsy Gaynor, and he will, for God's sake, act like you know who she is.
I got pastrami stuck in my teeth. And that's everybody's problem. Who's got floss?
I was wondering, like, you know, when Nelson said, she says you're a selfish lover. And you know how Krusty mishears things. I was hoping a line of like, and I'm not a elfish brother. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a really bad rhyme. I can't think of one.
I'm not an elvish shover.
Yeah.
Also, it is weird that like, hey, son, that man that I fucked right. Elfish didn't go down on my vagina. Where you came from.
Maybe Nelson asks, you know, his mom, like, Mom, how was your day today? She's like, well, that clown sure didn't give it to me that good.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's a little weird.
Also, I felt like the pastrami in his teeth. It's a really big piece of pastrami.
So Mitzi Gaynor, mm-hmm. Steve, if you don't know, she was an American actress, singer, and dancer.
Oh.
She was in films like There's No Business Like Show Business.
Appropriate.
The Birds and the Bees.
Hmm.
South Pacific.
Oh.
She's currently still alive with us, Steve, at the young age of 89.
Nice.
Yeah, she kind of just stopped doing like acting stuff in like the 60s and just, you know, lived her life, I guess.
Yeah, she has like that classic Hollywood dame
yeah.
look to her.
So there we go. Happy birthday, Mitzi Gaynor.
On September 4th.
Yeah, she'll appreciate this.
I think so. She's a big fan. We get all of her mail.
It's because we live next door to her.
Exactly. Our mailman's not very good.
Mail so, carrier, Steve.
Sorry, mail carrier. Letter carrier. So Mr. Teeny rushes to the medicine cabinet and digs through it, frantically throwing bottles over his shoulder in search of that dental floss. Lisa, in a stroke of genius, takes off her pearl necklace, removes the pearls, and offers the string to Krusty to remove the errant lunch meat. This makes Krusty happy, and he declares Lisa to be the best thing to happen to the studio since Mitzi Gaynor, or cheap Korean animation.
It's so weird seeing Lisa without pearls around her neck.
Yeah, it's anytime she or Marge take off their necklaces, they look weirdly naked.
Yep, that's what I was thinking too.
It's really uncomfortable.
Very uncomfortable. Don't do that again, guys.
No.
So back at the 742 Evergreen Terrace, Bart can't believe that Lisa's working for Krusty and he's not. I mean, he knows everything about him. From like his favorite blends, which is blueberry, mm-hmm. to his favorite horse in the 2004 Belmont. It was Smarty Jones, Steve.
Of course.
Bart even has a case of Krusty endorsed Norwegian baby wipes known as Krusty Cloven Baby Visker.
Which is actual Norwegian for Krusty brand Krusty the Clown baby wipes. So
do they actually say
I looked up baby wipes. Yeah, I think so.
Bart storms off to his room muttering, and Homer and Marge debate on which parent should help with their son's troubles.
Bart's having girl trouble. You better go talk to him.
It's clown trouble. That's your responsibility.
I thought I was in charge of bedtime stories and pets dying.
Yeah, well, we're adding clowns.
Oh, fine. But you just bought yourself ear piercing and strange new feelings.
Fine.
Lisa's got school, career, posture. Why'd she have to steal Krusty from me?
Son, the healthy thing is to get rid of everything that reminds you of Krusty, which appears to be everything. Hey, maybe we should give Lisa this room. You know, she works for Krusty now.
Wow.
Steve, if you ever had kids, and we hope you don't, who's going to handle the clown problems? You or your wife? Mm-hmm.
I feel like I should handle clown problems. That's Laura can take care of, like, serious stuff.
Yeah, Homer. Being Homer.
Yeah, he's dumb and unaware of the things that are happening around him.
I wish Bart had worked with Krusty before.
I know. Like, that, at least he could take solace in those memories. And maybe Krusty could remember it and, you know, hire him back. Or I don't know. That would be an interesting episode, though. A whole thing where Krusty hires Bart because Bart's such a big fan. And, like, he could stumble on stage and, like, accidentally, I mean.
Your ideas intrigue me, and I'd like to sign up for your newsletter, Steve.
Well, maybe this one will, this episode will bear some original fruit that we can also applaud at.
All right.
So Bart and Homer head over to the Android's Dungeon and Baseball Card Shop to sell off Bart's Krusty memorabilia. Their initial offer is all of the clown merchandise for a copy of Radioactive Man versus Muhammad Ali, which is obviously a parody of the Superman versus Muhammad Ali. Greg, did you ever read that issue?
No.
Okay. I was wondering the circumstances that led them to get in the ring.
Lex Luthor did it?
Yeah, probably.
I think there was a draw, though.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because it'd be weird, because that means that, because if Muhammad Ali beat up Superman, that means that if some boxer beat up Muhammad Ali, that person is then stronger than Superman by association.
Hmm.
A comic book guy offers them Radioactive Man meets the Kansas City Royals, which is also appealing. But Bart then suggests that he gets the Radioactive Man versus Restless Leg Syndrome. But unimpressed, Jeff Albertson tries a new approach.
Let us try a different tack. Are you interested in coin collecting?
Am I? No.
Wait. I will start you off with this bicentennial quarter, and I will throw in my man scrunchie.
Steve, I like to admit here that Jeff Albertson and I have the same hair. I haven't had a haircut in over a year because of the pandemic.
Sure.
And I know you can go to get your hair cut and wear, you know, as long as you wear a mask or wear a mask, but I still don't want to. But I've never had as long as the hair as I have had now.
Wow.
And I've got to do something I've never got to do with my hair before, and that's actually put it in a ponytail.
Wow.
You know, it's not, and like I do it like every day that I get home from work.
Mm-hmm.
Comb my hair back and put it in a ponytail, and it gets out of the way. I love it.
Nice.
But getting out of the shower with cold, wet hair, I can understand how you people with long hair hate that.
Yeah, it seems like it'd be really cold and take forever to dry.
Yeah, I've been using a blow dryer.
Whoa.
But then it poofs my hair out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worth it, Steve.
You are. Maybe you're born with it, but it might also be Maybelline, but either way.
I think it's just because like once it gets a little like matted down and not poofy, you know, because you're not supposed to wash your hair every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a couple of days of like the oil builds up, and then I like to comb it out, and I like to pretend I'm like John Wick, Keanu Reeves, or like Dave Grohl or something.
Sure.
Those guys can pull off the cool long hair.
Yeah.
You know, like Dave Grohl always chews gum when he sings and plays.
Yeah, it's kind of his trademark.
Yeah, should I do that for this podcast?
Sure, I think that'd be great.
You can do the same if you want. Or, you know what? I know you're into soup, so why don't you eat soup while doing the podcast?
Yeah, I'll just eat some hot soup.
I'll chew gum. And you also should probably practice your drumming, Steve.
Yeah. Minestrone. So, comic book guy then shakes his hair free as sexy music plays. This, in my opinion, went on a little long, but that's just me.
Hey, they got to fill up some time there, Steve.
It's true. It felt a little Family Guy-y. Bart and Homer opt for the coins, leaving the scrunchie behind, and they back away, leaving the comic book shop.
I haven't gotten to the scrunchie yet, though, Steve. Just to let
that's
you know.
Good. Yeah.
So back at Krusty Lou Studios, the clown prince of Channel 6 is impressed with the way Lisa cleaned his dressing room. And, you know, everything's in its place. There's nothing festering inside of nothing. And she's even alphabetized his book collection, which is consists of like Almanac and the Yellow Pages.
For you people listening, Yellow Pages are a book that would be left on our doorstep that had phone numbers of all the businesses because the internet wasn't a thing.
And what's an almanac?
It's like Google Maps, but in book form. So Krusty's never had such a great intern. He's even given Lisa the nickname Goy Wonder, mostly because he doesn't remember her name.
So back with Bart here. He's got a story, Steve.
Oh.
Bart is excited to fill his slots with coins. He wants to fill his coin slot, Steve, you see.
Exactly.
Coin slot. That is until he learns that they have to be specific coins. He then says that the hobby of coin collecting. I wonder if there's a term for coin collecting.
I think it might be numismatics. Numismatics.
I believe you.
Say it one more time. Probably still wrong, but numismatics.
Numismatics. Sounds good. But he says numismatics sucks.
Yeah.
But Homer steps in to actually point out that all hobbies suck. But if you keep doing them, at the end, you might find that you managed to kill some precious time. The Simpsons men then bond as they hunt for coins with the Andy Griffith music playing in the background.
Nice. So after digging through Marge's purse, Homer and Bart go to the park. They take advantage of the Quickie Mart's take a penny, leave a penny tray and pretend to be a toll booth, all to fill up the empty slots in the coin collecting book.
Steve, do you ever collect coins?
No. I remember when the state quarters came out, my mom was really into it. And so I think she let me have the book when she willed it to me.
Wow, Steve, you have quite a collection there.
Yeah, it was. But then I saw a Frogger machine.
Steve, that book is worth $12.50. You know that, right?
Yeah, but Frogger.
I think I did the same thing. I think they started coming out, 1999?
Yeah.
It was like five a year or something like that. Anyways, I think I have still have the same book with the 1999 ones. But yeah, coin collecting. It does seem like for nerds.
It's like all the fun of baseball collecting without any of the sports.
and you can't chew on the bubble gum you get with coins.
You probably shouldn't if there's gum connected to that coin. Leave it under the bench.
Yeah. Anyway, so after digging through Marge's purse, Homer and Bart go to the park. So then they head to the Luck of the Irish Wishing Well, where Kirk Van Houten, Agnes, Lamb of God, Skinner, Jasper, Lenny, and Ralph are all throwing the currency down the well in hopes for their wishes to come true. And Bart and Homer are at the bottom of the well, wearing catcher's mitts and catching the fallen change.
So I know that we alluded to another episode, Bart gets famous. But also, come on, Bart was stuck in a well. It's a very famous episode. Sting was in it. And now they're just like, yeah, he's going to be in a well again. And they just climb out of it, too.
Yeah, if only they've done
maybe that. Maybe I'm being a grump.
You are being a drunk. So he said? Hey,
a grump. But
oh, okay. that makes more sense.
Yeah. So Bart and Homer are then met by a leprechaun who is spouting his nonsense. And the green-clad Irish character jumps into the well where he and Homer exchange fisticuffs. And Homer and Bart emerge from the well and place a maintenance hole cover, formerly known as a manhole cover, over the well with the screaming leprechaun still inside.
So then the Simpsons boys are happy to have filled out their coin collecting book, but they then discover a hidden page. Meanwhile, Lisa discovers a new aspect of her job.
Slide in the 1863 Confederate half dime, and every slot is full.
This is the first book I've ever finished reading or pushing things into. What the? We missed one.
The inverted double-struck penny, or Kissing Lincolns, was mistakenly minted in December of 1917 when a brief glimpse of a woman's ankle caused 3 days of rioting at the Philadelphia Mint.
The one on the left looks into it, but the one on the right is just experimenting. Son, we are getting that coin.
Here I am, walking the plank. I wish this mean pirate wasn't poking me with his sword. Where's the chimp?
Mr. Teeny's not here. He's stuck in traffic.
Oh, what do? I can't ad-lib to save my life. Oh boy.
Yo-ho-ho and a bottle of fun.
What are you doing, kid?
My job, making you look good.
Yeah, right. So, what be your name, matey?
Long John Seltzer.
Krusty can't ad-lib? His whole job is ad-libbing. He's been on TV for 40 years. He's done 4,000 episodes, and he can't ad-lib?
Steve, it's a cartoon.
I know, but still.
I mean, I'll play devil's advocate here real quick.
All right.
Come on, get in there. Go! Stupid game.
All right, I'm back from playing devil's advocate. I mean, Krusty can't do a lot of things. And I could see him not knowing how to ad-lib, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just weird. It just seems odd.
Well, you know who loves to be in the spotlight and always wanted to be a performer is Lisa.
Of course.
Always wanted to be part of Krusty the Clown. She squirts all over Krusty's face. The seltzer, Steve.
Oh, yeah.
Causing him to fall into the kiddie pool. And that brings up uproarious laughter from the crowd of children there, which Lisa soaks in and she's intoxicated by the fame. That's such a character trait of Lisa.
Oh, yeah. She loves being famous. She loves being noticed. She's a famed extrovert, Lisa Simpson.
Yep.
So Sideshow Mel continues his narration, telling of Krusty going to his Lake Tahoe retreat for some R&R when he finds that he has a guest with those very initials.
But he was about to get an unexpected visit from a third and fourth R, Ron Rabinowitz.
Krusty. I've been your agent for 45 years. I am telling you, watch out for this Lisa Simpson character. She has got a taste for Lady Laughter, and she will step right over a certain clown to get it.
Which clown? Chuckles? Professor Nitwit?
No, you.
No, you? The Chinese clown?
Oh, great one, Krusty. But seriously, you're in real trouble here.
Yeah? What do you mean? If there was a rehearsal for the network, I would have been told by my assistant.
Well, where is he?
I don't know. I guess he forgot. But people seem to like me last week.
You stood in for Mr. Teeny. How'd you like to stand in for Krusty?
Oh, well, it's one thing to fill in for a monkey. But a comedy legend? I wouldn't dream of it.
I respect that. Cancel the run-through.
Okay, I'll do the monologue.
I think that there was a timing that was a little off for, you know, he did the no you joke.
Yeah.
And then his assistant or his manager said something, I forget it, even though we just watched the clip. But his phone has a ringtone of like the wah, wah, wah.
Mm-hmm.
And he picks it up too quickly. Like, that should have played out.
You're right.
He was depressed. And then you hear the wah, wah, wah.
And that's his phone. You're totally right.
And then it should have been paused. And then another wah, wah, wah. And he's like, oh, sorry, I got to pick up my phone. That's my phone, or whatever.
Yeah, that would definitely have helped the scene.
But seriously, you're in real trouble here.
Yeah.
What did you think of that no you joke?
I mean, I feel like if I had watched it live, I probably would have laughed at it.
Yeah. I gave it a little chuckle.
Yeah, it was kind of funny.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah. Lisa's outfit was weird. It's just pants. Her little clown outfit. It's just weird. It's just pants.
She only likes to wear like a dress or, you know, only like one item of clothing.
Yeah, just odd.
I'm looking at it. She's probably wearing her dress and just quickly just like threw those pants on and over her dress. And her,
oh, yeah, her, you're shoes, probably right.
Her shoes are still the same. She's got her pearls and she's threw on a nose. All right. I fixed it.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for saving this episode.
Welcome.
It's perfect now. Krusty and his agent rush to the studio, driving through the security gates with no time to pretend that the guard is a person who matters. Krusty then swerves in front of stage one in what kind of looked to me like an attempt to show off some computer animation. Like, it just seemed like they were trying too hard to show that scene. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
No, I see what you're saying. Going back to the dress thing.
Sure.
I'm watching the scene again, and she's wearing her dress, but she has the pants on underneath because she rips her dress off, and the pants are just there.
Okay. So she had it like bunched up underneath her dress.
It's like she's wearing like giant bloomers. Yes.
Yeah.
Now he's settled the scene. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. We're
gonna stop watching an 8-year-old girl rip her dress off. Okay.
Good thing that's on tape. That'd be good advice for you in general.
Anyway, so Krusty busts through the doors, but is shushed as Lisa is impressing the studio suits, such as Lindsay Nagel, with a joke about a centipede being late because it was putting on its shoes. Lindsay is crying with laughter, and Krusty finds that everything Ron said came true, including Ron offering Lisa representation and egg white omelets.
Hmm. You like an egg white omelet? Nah, Jesus, I can't talk.
Yeah, of course. I'll eat any omelet.
Yeah, omelets are good. Saddened by the fact that he's replaced by an 8-year-old, Krusty tries to beat Lisa at her own game, being 8. He then dresses up like a dandy with an oversized lollipop.
Steve, I don't think you can say dandy anymore.
Oh, sorry. Fancy boy?
Sure.
La 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 la, I'm 8 years old.
Krusty, you've learned that fame, that fickle beauty, can leave you when you need it most. And Lisa had a lesson to learn as well. A lesson about... You there! Cut that out!
Sorry.
So Mo has the ability to walk through frozen time.
Yeah, if he and Zach Morris ever got together, they could make a killing. Because he could just yell time out, and then Mo could rob them all.
Yeah, we could take all of Screech's spaghetti sauce.
And all the buddy bands.
And I can't remember anymore.
And that bust of Elvis that
broke.
So our final act of the show, or the episode anyway, begins as an episode of The Lisa Show that is wrapping up. She says her goodbye to her audience by taking a Polaroid of them
and promising to keep the photo forever. But behind the curtain, Lisa dumps the picture into a trash can as Sideshow Mel switches from internal monologue to external dialogue. He invites Lisa to the commissary for a celebratory meal, but Lisa wants to wave at her fans one last time.
So in front of a crowd, Lisa does some shtick with a cane. She juggles some bowling pins, even walks like an Egyptian. The crowd's eating it up like candy, but Lisa's eating up the praise also like candy. But Mel's narration tells a better comparison, with the applause raining on Lisa while poor Krusty found himself a little parched.
Oh no. We then cut to Last Gasp with Krusty the Clown, a meager late night show airing at 3:32 a.m. with a sad set and very few audience members. The show is sponsored by Nappian, Knock 'Em Out, and new Knock 'Em Out Jr. for kids. Krusty's guest is local bully Jimbo Jones, and Krusty has never sunk lower, not even when he made out with a blow-up doll. He sadly walks off stage, leaving the beanie bully to flex his muscles and wonder if his ex, Cindy, regrets breaking up with him. And I've got some trivia that I didn't find, but somebody on the internet said that the closed captioning replaced blow-up doll with Brett Butler, so it says... This is the lowest I've ever sunk, and I once made out with Brett Butler, which I don't know if that's true, but if so, it's kind of a diss to Grace Under Fire star Brett Butler.
Shame on you, Krusty.
Yeah.
Hey, Steve.
First Nelson Muntz's mom, and then Brett Butler. He has a type.
Can we just go back and check on Bart and Homer and their coin collection?
That sounds like fun.
One of these has got to be that smooching Lincoln penny. Nope, nope, dime, button, pepperoni slice.
Wait, this is a classic 1978 Pizza Hut. Terrible.
Nope, nope, nope.
Son, coin collecting's a lot like life. It stopped being fun a long time ago. But unlike life, I have a solution for this.
Going once, going twice, sold to Mr. Burns.
I have won every coin, but I feel strangely empty. Oh, there's another coin. That should do it.
Our last item up for bid is a mint condition 1917 Kissing Lincoln penny.
Okay, boy, this is it. $5!
$500.
$5 cash.
Sir, the promise of cash is not an enticement. The current bid is $500. Do I hear a counterbid? Going once, going twice.
Dad!
$501!
$10 million.
Objection, Your Honor!
Sir, I'm not a judge, but overruled. Sold to Mr. Burns for $10 million.
Homer offering the cash was kind of funny.
Yeah, there's some levity in this episode. So outside Gavelby's auction house, Mr. Burns is happy to have paid a pretty penny for that pretty penny. Now, Homer knocks on the window of Burns' car, telling the miserly millionaire that the coin collecting he has brought him and Bart close together, and that the penny would mean the world to his son. And Burns replies that if a Homer had a kissing Lincoln penny, he wouldn't. I like how Burns is like rolling up the window, and then when Homer says like, but it's connecting my son and I together, and like he rolls it down, I'm like, huh, is that like Burns actually cares?
Yeah, a little bit of empathy from old Monty.
He might have been thinking of his son Larry.
Yeah, maybe they shared a coin or something. So Homer understands Monty's reasoning, but makes a final plea to help his boy buy a gumball. He asks Burns for a change for a nickel, and Burns happily obliges, then drives off. Initially, he's pleased with himself, since he only gave Homer 4 cents in exchange for the nickel. But then he's horrified that he just gave away the coin that he'd spent $10 million on. Homer and Bart place the rare penny in its appropriate slot, then place the book on the shelf, never to be looked at again.
And that's the end of the B plot.
That was it.
Back to the A plot. Mel's narration goes on to say that after being bonded by love and larceny, Homer and Bart got dressed in their tuxedos, had a minor disagreement that involved some classic choking, made amends, and then went downstairs where they watched proudly as Lisa accepts her award.
Lisa, before you walk away from this venerable hall and into the arms of your adoring fans, may I have a moment?
Well, I do owe you everything. Make it quick.
Behold, your fellow winners of the Entertainer of the Year Award.
I don't recognize any of them.
And why should you? He appears nightly on Broadway, selling combs and mints in the men's room. She was fired after a bad rehearsal from Homeboys in Outer Space. And perhaps the saddest one of all, he graced stages from London to Los Angeles. When he played Biff in Death of a Salesman, every woman in the audience wished they were Hap. But that was before he took
the bone.
Melvin Van Horn. Sideshow Mel, it's you. How could this happen to you? To all these wonderful performers.
Applause is an addiction, like heroin or checking your email. Once you have a taste, you'll do anything to get more.
Did you ever have an addiction to checking your email?
No.
I mean, that sounds like a writer's thing on The Simpsons.
Yeah, I mean, I hate the number, like the little red number that pops up on your phone.
Yeah.
So I feel like I need to like look at, like just open up my email so that's not there anymore, but I don't read them.
I literally just go to that to get rid of the red and I just swipe, delete, 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 yeah. Or archive, actually. I don't know why.
Yeah, I do that too. And it's weird because, you know, if you donate to any political party or fill out any political survey, you'll get millions of emails and they're all like, we're very disappointed in you, Steve.
And I'm like, and like Joe Biden still texts me like, hey, we need some money. I'm like, what the fuck are you emailing me for, Joe?
You won. Stop it.
Yeah, stop it. Dr. Jill's in my state now, Steve.
Oh, really?
Yeah, first lady herself.
What is Mrs. Biden doing there?
Oh, she's going to be the guest on our podcast.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, she's a huge fan of this episode. I think she's just checking on like facilities for like COVID stuff.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. You know how many times Melania came to Washington State?
Probably about twice as many as she came to Oregon.
So zero?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, what else was in that clip?
You would think that Lisa could tell that painting of Sideshow Mel was Sideshow Mel.
I was so surprised. And like when he stood right over it, I'm like, oh my God.
Oh.
Biggest reveal of all time.
Melvin Van Horn is Sideshow Mel.
I think some of her Simpsons DNA is kicking in from the Mel side.
I think episode. So.
All right. Well, Mel warns Lisa not to end up like his people, to not end up like him. Like we said, and Lisa realizes that she needs to get out while she still can. And so she thanks Mel as he falls to his knees crying. She runs back on the stage and tells the audience she has one more person to thank. Steve, I think I know who this might be. It's probably Crunchy the Clown.
Probably is Croopy the Clown.
What do you want? You've already taken everything I care about.
Really? So what else is in the news?
This just in, I don't give a crap.
I'm trying to set you up for laughs.
Trying to set me up with a giraffe? Oh, right. You guys know about giraffes. Long legs, big neck.
Here comes the zinger.
Speaking of necks, my girlfriend is a real pain in mine. She crashed her car into mine and said, look, honey, we have a hybrid.
Timely.
By giving everything away, she was able to keep the only thing that mattered, her dignity. God, how I envy her.
Steve, I don't understand when Lenny just said finally. What's he saying finally to?
He was saying timely.
Oh, I thought he said finally.
I was like, waiting for that joke.
I didn't know.
Or maybe he just realized this is like the final act of the episode.
That's like, what I thought too. It's like,
finally.
I just heard finally. Timely. That makes more sense. Okay. Thanks, joke explainer man, Steve.
And thank you, closed captioning. Not just for the hearing impaired anymore.
Yeah. I guess I could have done that.
Yeah. It's easier for my notes. So Lauren Lapkus is in the group of the celebrities wearing a purple dress when Lisa gets to Krusty.
You mean Laureline Lumpkin.
There we go. Lurleen Lapkus.
All right.
So we then cut to Sideshow Mel, dressed as a fire hydrant. Krusty, dressed as the dog Nana from Peter Pan, rubs on Mel and announces his love for the hydrant. Mel tells Krusty that his wife is giving birth to a baby. So it'd be anything else. Giving birth at the same time.
Was it a human baby?
As far as I know, but we didn't actually cut to it, so it could be a otter human hybrid. But Krusty just says that there's four more takes and then chases Mel around the stage as the crowd of children laugh.
Steve, that's the episode. It's over. It's over.
All right. That's a relief.
Like pissing on a hydrant.
Exactly. It's weird that, you know, cartoon dogs love fire hydrants because they're just going to piss on them. It just seems like.
Yeah. All right. Well, Steve, speaking of piss, I need to go do that right now.
All righty. You do that. We'll take a break and we'll be right back. And we're back. Craig, let's finish our talk of
All About Lisa with our favorite visual gags, our favorite quotes, because we had so many, our overall review, and we'll find out what we're watching next week. So let's start it off with the things you look at. What are some of your favorite visuals?
I like it when Lisa rips off her dress and is revealed to be wearing pants. You know, I just go with it's probably the easiest one is to do the kiss and pennies.
There you go. I think I would go with the I don't even remember what it was called now, the nappy and the knock 'em out pills. Make that a t-shirt. Knock 'em out junior for kids. Kid tested, Michael Jackson approved.
How about some jokes, Steve?
Do I go with the caterpillar one or the one about the giraffe?
Giraffe was pretty good.
Yeah. Timely, finally. I don't know. There aren't a lot of quotes. I do like Homer's take on hobbies, being that they all suck, but sometimes they'll take up some of your time.
You know, not all your favorite quotes have to be funny. They could be poignant.
Yeah.
Let's make this a meme like they did with the line from WandaVision that everyone loves.
Exactly.
What is grief if not love persevering, Steve?
Right. What is a hobby if not a waste of time?
Well, Photoshop Homer's face on Vision's face.
There we go.
And Bart's face on Wanda's face. There we go. We made a Simpsons shitpost meme, Steve.
Yay!
And from one of everyone's favorite quotes from The Simpsons.
Everyone's favorite episode.
It would be funny if we did make that meme and we put it on Simpsons shit posting. I guarantee everyone that saw it, like, what the fuck quote is this? This isn't even The Simpsons. They wouldn't even know. All right. Yeah, there you go. Can I just steal yours?
Sure.
I'm sure there was something funny. How about Milhouse? He almost wanted me to be on the Krusty Show. You know what? I'll just give it to Drew Carey.
He was fun. Lines. Yeah.
Wow, we really like this episode.
Man.
Let's just talk about it, Steve.
Yeah. The elephant in the room.
That's Stampy.
Yes. The Stampy in the room is obviously the Simpsons did it. Bart gets famous. He becomes a fan of Krusty, becomes his intern, then accidentally goes on stage. It's the same story.
I was talking to you off pod and I said, do you think it's like Al Jean? It's towards the end of the season. He goes to the writer's room like, hey, we still need another episode to write. You know, it was a really funny episode I just watched. Bart gets famous. Do something like that, but, you know, different, like with Lisa. And then they're all like, should we just do what he said, you know, different with Lisa?
Yeah.
That sounds about good. Let's order lunch.
Yep. And that was it. You're completely right. And like, I didn't want to just shit all over this episode, but they make it kind of hard.
That's what she said.
I don't know. Like there are so many parts of it that seemed weird. Bart and Homer coin collecting just seemed tacked on and literally like something that we would come up with.
Right. Again, part of that meeting was, don't forget, we need like a B story. I don't know, like Homer and Bart do something.
Yeah.
And then someone's like, what, collect coins? And Al Jean's, I don't have time for this, and walks out.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, okay, coin collecting.
Yeah.
And just there was a lot of filler visuals, like the car screeching in there to show off their animation, I guess. That was weird.
I mean, I'm going to agree with you with everything you said so far. I think also thing we've kind of alluded in this episode was Lisa's craving for fame and attention and being on the spotlight. I mean, I know she is like an artistic, talented young lady.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she does want to be on stage, but playing saxophone, you know, playing jazz.
Right.
So it's weird to see her like wanting to be a clown. And then also taking on those traits of being turning almost into a Krusty and like disrespecting other people. And, you know, like, I will cherish this picture forever, and throws it in the garbage can.
And they didn't even push that too hard. Like Lisa being a jerk because she was so famous lasted for like 15 seconds. It was
really they could have done this episode a little bit long. The B plot was over there. But that was sadly like was probably the laughs I had the most with Bart and Homer.
Yeah.
But with Lisa, it could have been a whole episode where it just drags on. Like maybe she's like, and then she has her own assistant that's Milhouse, and then she treats him like shit, and she sees it, you know.
That's a good story. Yeah.
Also, maybe you could have swapped it instead of Lisa being famous. Maybe it was Milhouse that was picked, and Bart gets jealous because of that.
Yeah.
You know? But then they could, you know, maybe would have brought up like Milhouse being like, you already worked with him before. And he's like, yeah, but that seemed like it was years ago.
Right. The fact that they didn't bring it up at all.
Yeah. Was a weird. And then, yeah, you did the well thing. That was when they were Bart and Homer in the well. I think that was more of a stretch for you on your part, but the the biggest stamp in the room is definitely that Bart already got famous.
Yeah, and I don't know, this episode just it felt like they just phoned it in. Like, even the Springfield Showbiz Awards, I don't know, it just seems like they could have named it anything else, like the Springfield-y Movie Awards, or just generally an award show for showbiz.
Right.
It's weird. Yeah, so not two kissing Lincolns, but a 1917 wheat penny goes for about 75 cents.
All right.
And so out of 75 cents, I'm going to give this, let's say, 4 pennies, enough to buy a gumball or 4.
One of those yummy hard gumballs in the grocery store that like break your teeth.
Exactly. Yeah. That have been there for who knows how long.
I want one right now.
Yeah.
We already discussed the things in this episode, so I don't really want to continue on with this podcast. Bye. No. But everything that you said is, I'll say ditto. But yeah, those are my biggest complaints of what I talked about. And it just felt lethargic or something.
No, I think so. It does feel really kind of lazy. And it's a bummer because like last week's episode kind of didn't work for us. And, you know, one of the things about this podcast is I want to, you know, celebrate The Simpsons in the later seasons and find the good. And this isn't it.
And we've talked about this before. I'm like, you know, people go on the internet and talking about like, oh, this movie sucks so much. Oh, everything sucks. Oh, I can't believe this sucks. You know, like talking about like, you know, the fandom, like the Star Wars fandom and even The Simpsons fandom. And, you know, that's someone's art that you're just shitting on, like, because, right?
Right.
And honestly, Steve and I wouldn't do better.
Right. No,
it's tough. It's not fatigue, because I watched like a couple Simpsons episodes from like season 8 the other day and still have fun watching those.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right. I think it was just like down to the wire, down to the last of the season, and they just needed to get something out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it is. It's probably in my top or bottom five of this series that we've reviewed. I think A Scorpion's Tale might be better than this episode.
I think you might be right.
So next week we're going to watch. No. So I was talking about the two kissing Lincolns, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I went to look up what the most expensive penny was.
Hmm.
And it's actually a 1943 copper alloy penny. It's really valuable because just about only 40 were made.
Wow.
Yeah, it was created by accident, probably, on copper alloy one set blanks left in the press in the wartime years when pennies were converted to steel. Anyways, so that could have been the reason why they screwed up. So the first of the 1943 copper cent was sold in 1958 for more than $40,000, Steve. That's 1958. Another one in 1996 for $82,000. But then recently, Steve, someone bought a penny for $1.7 million.
Wow.
So making this a $1.7 million penny. So if you ever get a penny from 1943, you just want to make sure... If you guys ever get coins anymore, I don't know. But if you want to tell if it's how the 1943 penny is real, use a magnet. If the penny sticks, it's not copper. Huh. Better luck next time. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah. So we'll say out of 40, because there's only 40 coins made. I'll give this episode a 3.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
All right. Yep. I say it's actually a skip.
Yeah, it's a skip. Watch Bart Gets Famous. It's a fun episode.
I might have to right after this. Record.
Yeah.
After I watch Bart Gets Famous, let's find out what we should watch for next week.
All right. And to do that, we're going to need that good old fashioned Wheel of Random. And let's bring it out and give it a spin to see what season we're in. Boo doop.
We have season 28.
Season 28. Alrighty, let's give that wheel another spin to see what episode we're watching. Boop.
We have episode 15.
Season 28, episode 15. Why, that's The Cad in the Hat. What happens in that, Craig?
So Bart ruins Lisa's perfect day out of jealousy and becomes haunted by the manifestation of his own guilty conscience. And then we have a B story, which is Homer is revealed to be a master chess player, which helps him bond with his competitive dad.
Huh.
Yeah.
Cool.
What's so funny?
I don't know. It's like, Bart and Homer become coin collectors. Homer is a master chess player. Like, do they have the same dartboard that we do and they were just throwing shit at the wall?
Well, Steve, this is episode is, what, like 10 years after the one we just watched? It came out in 2017. Do you remember this episode?
I do not at all.
I think I do because I remember Patton Oswalt plays Bart's guilt, and I think I remember.
Oh, and Robot that. Chicken's Seth Green is in it as well.
Well, it was written by Ron Zimmerman and directed by Stephen Dean Moore.
Hmm.
And originally aired February 19th, 2017, like I just said.
Alrighty, well, I look forward to watching it and finding out just how good it could be.
All right, for this week, we want you to go to tpublic.com/user/annoyedgruntboys. We would also like it if you reached out to us on social media, like Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, at 138simpsons.
And we'd also like you to email us at 138simpsons@gmail.com. And we'd also like you to leave a review and 5 stars or the equivalent on your favorite podcatching app. But it needn't be an actual review. You can just ask us a question or say your favorite coin. Yeah, we'll say that.
All right. For this week, I've been half an annoyed grunt boy, Craig.
And I've been your other half annoyed grunt boy, Steve.
And remember, keep reaching for the skis.
Hobbies are nothing if not a waste of time.
Ha 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 ha!